They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, emergency podcast time. We've got some pretty significant news in the NBA. Daryl Morey, the general manager of the Houston Rockets, been the GM in Houston since 2007. Something of, I mean, let's call him a polarizing figure in the NBA, but definitely one of the more aggressive GMs that the league has ever seen, really. He is leaving the Houston Rockets. And to talk about that, I wanted to bring in Michael Shapiro. Does a great job covering the Rockets for SI.com, and he joins me on the pod. Mike, let's just start with, like, the surprise factor. You know, Daryl's been there, as I said, for 13, 14 years. There is a new owner in place. Tilman Fertitta, just the last couple of years, bought the team. You know, Daryl worked for Les Alexander for the entirety of his career before then. So I don't know if I would say I'm shocked by this decision by Daryl, but where do you stand on it?
You know, I think it's certainly much more surprising, I would say, than Mike D'Antoni's departure. You know, it was D'Antoni's decision ultimately, but the writing was kind of on the wall, you felt, barring maybe a finals run there. This, you know, there wasn't any real indication from either Morey or Tilman Fertitta that this would kind of be the end of Morey's tenure. Fertitta, even a couple weeks ago, you know, said, whoever the next head coach will be, that will be Daryl Morey's decision. We look forward to making that decision and kind of moving forward. So I think maybe it didn't catch Fertitta specifically by surprise after conversations with Morey, but I think for the public writ large, and I think people who know the Rockets, it still came as a pretty significant surprise here.
Yeah, I guess part of my opinion on this is somewhat shaped from my experience in the bubble. And I wrote this over on SI.com tonight that, yeah, I had a chance to catch up with Daryl a few times in the bubble and just looked tired, man. And I guess, like, I guess everybody is tired under these circumstances, but I mean, anybody listening to this podcast knows the kind of year that Daryl Morey has had. I mean, it effectively began last July when Daryl made the move to acquire Russell Westbrook. It continued when the negotiations between Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets publicly blew up. And then it had, you know, a flamethrower taken to it when Daryl put out the tweet supporting the independence movement in Hong Kong. And, you know, the NBA kind of briefly collapsed and the ramifications are still being felt across the NBA. You couple that with, and I'll get into this in a minute, but you couple that into where the Rockets kind of are with their team and the future of this team. I guess that's kind of what shaped my opinion on Mike, that maybe this year doesn't happen the exact way that it happened. We don't see Daryl Morey walking away, but it was such a stressful year that maybe it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, you know, you kind of felt that there was at least some degree of stress around the organization this year. Now, part of that, I think, is that they, you know, had been one win away from the finals in 2018. They had a disappointing loss to the Warriors in 2019. They make the big trade for Westbrook, as you said. So let alone the expectations that were facing the team, I think added stress. Then you had D'Antoni's contract situation, you know, Morey, you know, while his contract was secured, there wasn't 100% guarantee. It seemed like that he'd stay, especially at the China situation. So I think you make a fair point in that just kind of the overall stress and just how exhausting this full calendar year has been. It makes sense that he might want to step away for at least a year or two for the NBA.
So we're kind of in speculation mode here to a degree. There's limited information. We've got the statement from Daryl when he said, you know, after 14 years, it's time to take a step back. Tilman supported him. But let's start with the China stuff, with the tweet and the ramifications from it. You were around that team all year pre-coronavirus. Like, what kind of impact do you think that incident had on the relationship between Daryl and ownership and really Daryl and the team?
You know, I think it's hard to parse on that first front with Daryl and ownership. I know we really didn't see Daryl, really, it seemed, until around Christmas time. And after that, he was kind of not really around the arena very much, or if he was, he wasn't very public facing. In relation to his relationship with the team, I don't know how much that was affected. You know, I still think that Mike D'Antoni and the players had full confidence that he could kind of execute the vision. And to his credit, he really did. You know, I think that the Robert Covington trade really shaped their season. Although they fell short, they really did play some of their best basketball. I think, you know, perhaps there was some strain there with Fertitta and Maury Scherr, especially since it was such a huge economic proposition. But even then, you know, a couple weeks ago, Fertitta kind of gave his endorsement again of Maury. So it seems like it was a decision that was just Daryl's based on, you know, seems like stress and just the need to kind of step away and relax a little bit. I don't know how much any friction still lasted after the incident.
I wondered what, I mean, the Rockets, you know, Tillman Fertitta is worth a lot of money. He's a very rich man. But, you know, the Rockets, as you know, have been very careful to avoid the luxury tax. I mean, there's no secret to that. You know, explain to people, like, how the Rockets have been operating in relation to the luxury tax. Like, how what has been the mandate there? Has there been one about avoiding that tax?
You know, this year specifically, Tillman Fertitta kind of, you know, hinted that he would be willing to go over the tax. I don't think the Rockets necessarily did in the end. In previous years, there's been kind of a more hard mandate, or at least it seemed as though, you know, the Rockets can't really dip too far into the luxury tax. And it has been something that has hamstrung Maury. I think it has hamstrung the franchise in spurts. But I think that's what makes Daryl Morey so great ultimately, is that he was able to make these moves on the margins, right? I think he'll be remembered for the Harden trade, of course, also this Russell Westbrook deal. You know, we can kind of discuss how much ownership he has over that decision. But, you know, I think that the economic situation in Houston isn't exactly perfect. You know, Tillman Fertitta is a rich man, but these luxury tax concerns have at least harmed the team on the margins in recent seasons for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, before we get into, you know, the Rockets' future, a couple of things on that. Like, the legacy of Daryl Morey, I mean, this, you know, as I kind of wrote tonight, like, his Wikipedia page is always going to have what happened with the Hong Kong tweet. But it, I mean, it runs so much deeper than that. He is, I don't want to get too hyperbolic there, but he's definitely one of the most aggressive GMs we've ever seen. And look, he has virtually nothing in common with Pat Riley, you know, in terms of, like, everything. But, you know, these are, we spent weeks, Mike, you know, hearing about Heat culture. I mean, the Rockets never won a championship, but there was a culture that they built there, a culture that, you know, said, we're not going to lose. Like, you know, they, in under Daryl's, you know, leadership, they only missed the playoffs three times. And each of those 3 years, they finished above 500. So, you know, they were always good. They just were never able to put together a team that put them over the top. What do you think his lasting legacy with Houston is going to be?
You know, I think our colleague Rohan Nadkarni, he kind of pointed out, I think really, you know, one of the most interesting parts of Morey's legacy in that, you know, in those Warriors dynasty years, he was really one of the few general managers who truly for it, right? You know, and he was one of the guys who tried to win the title, who attacked aggressively and tried to acquire as much talent as possible. Now, ultimately, they fell short. But his real legacy is that they acquired James Harden, and they were, you know, really in the title hunt for each of the past 4 years. Now, of course, they fell short, but only one team can win the championship. And given his constraints, given kind of the organization that he walked into, Daryl Morey will, you know, forever, I think, be honored in this organization as one of the great figures.
And we're almost always defined by those one moment, those small moments, right? And Daryl's moment and the Rockets' moment was those 2018 conference finals, wasn't it? Like, being up 3-2, then there's the Chris Paul injury, they lose in game seven. I mean, the narrative would have been just so much different. And who knows if they had gone to win the finals. Like, that would have been a tough win for them as well. But, I mean, you know, the narrative around Daryl, the narrative around Harden, Paul, the Rockets, I mean, it would have been so much different if they'd been able to hold on to that advantage, if they'd been able to beat Golden State. That, you know, more than the tweet, it's that series and the outcome of that series, I think that will be part of Daryl's lasting legacy.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, when you look back now, that's kind of the last great night, you know, of the Houston, you know, you don't want to say dynasty or anything like that. But, you know, that was really the peak of that team. That's where they had their chance. And you're right. You know, it's a real make or miss league. I know that's a cliche, but if the Rockets hit, you know, even three out of those 27, three or four of them, perhaps they reach the finals. And I don't really think the conversation regarding Harden's specifically would be the same as it is, especially, you know, given his noted playoff failures, as we say. I think if you make the finals, that kind of erases it in most people's public memory. I don't think there are any real Rockets fans who would be upset with Morey or frustrated that he fell short. I think given the circumstances and the roster he created and the gambles that he really took guts, and it really left the franchise in a better place.
Yeah, and, you know, to your point and what Rohan wrote, like, I mean, I don't know how many teams, you can probably count on one hand the number of teams mm-hmm. that armed up in 2017 and beyond. Once Durant went to the Warriors, there were a lot of teams out there said, maybe this is the time we rebuild. Maybe this is the time we, you know, tank or retool or certainly not spend significant money on our roster. And Daryl just said, screw it. He said, we might have a small chance to win, but we've got a small chance to win. So let's go out there and put together the best team that we possibly can have. He must have had nightmares about that. the 27 missed threes. That will go down as one of the, like, and they were like, those are shots that, and you saw it. You saw it closer than I did. Those are the shots the Rockets make regularly. Like the shots that they missed, you know, you give them the same shots a game again, and they certainly shoot a higher percentage. Like that, I mean, that has had to have haunted him for, to this day, I'm sure that still haunts him.
I'm sure it does as he ends his Rockets tenure. And then just one more thing, you know, you mentioned that he went all in 2017 and 2018. Not only did he do that, I mean, he did it with the kind of economic, you know, constraints that we mentioned. You know, it's not like he was given a green light to spend to compete. You know, like he didn't have a historic tax bill like the Warriors. You know, again, it's just really admiration for Morey. I think the Russell Westbrook trade is going to maybe complicate his legacy if things end a little ugly. But then again, that's kind of more of a question anyway. Was that more of an ownership call, a Morey call? I still think that's kind of one of the great questions moving forward here that we won't necessarily get an answer to.
So, I mean, what is your gut on that one? Because, I mean, Tillman Fertitta took a victory lap on that. Like, he basically said, like, my front office got a little gun shy, or I'm paraphrasing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I pushed them over the top. I mean, look, Daryl's never been shy about making a big deal. He made one for Harden. He made one for Paul. He's given away draft picks before. But, I mean, what's your gut on that? Like, who was ownership the driving force, or do you think Daryl really wanted Russell Westbrook?
You know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I personally have inside info onto whose final decision, but it seems like most accounts and most people that I've talked to and trust kind of say that, yeah, at the old end of the day, it was Tillman Fertitta kind of pushing that decision. Now, I guess, you know, it's kind of a question how much agency does a general manager have in that situation, but you're right. I mean, it was a real victory lap for Tillman Fertitta. Ultimately, it might work out, but, you know, it's kind of on record as Tillman, you know, was not a fan of Chris Paul's contract. Now it's kind of curious he acquired a similar contract with an extra year on top of it. But yeah, I think ultimately the final big move from Daryl Morey, I really don't think was personally his own 100%. I guess you can say the last major move really was Robert Covington. And I say that was a terrific addition. So the Westbrook one is a bit questionable, but I think, you know, Morey's record, given the circumstances, is pretty darn clean as he exits Houston.
So what is he leaving behind now? Like, what are the Rockets right now? Because, I mean, the team that they had to end the season is largely going to be back. The starting lineup, at least the projected starting lineup, has a, you know, combined payroll of like $120 million. So you're not going to have a lot of flexibility. He dealt away, you know, most of their draft capital for the next decade in the Russell Westbrook deal. They have no picks in this upcoming draft. I mean, I can't, and I haven't spoken to Daryl about this to this point, but I wonder, you know, how much the state of the Rockets had to do with his decision to walk away now, because they're in a tough spot in my view, Mike. They're a team that, you know, with Harden and Westbrook, you're not going to be bad. You're never going to be bad, but they don't have a coach, and they got pretty soundly thumped in those last four games by the Lakers. The Western Conference is going to be better next year. I mean, they're a playoff team, but I don't really see a higher ceiling than that with this group, at least not right now. And you couple that with the fact that their two stars are over the age of 30. Now, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think Harden's game probably ages pretty gracefully. He's, you know, he's really good at creating contact, getting to the free throw line. Those are skills I think will serve him well as some of his athleticism starts to wane. But Russell Westbrook, his entire game is predicated on athleticism, on playing, you know, with blinding speed in the open floor. I wonder if we have seen the peak of this version of the Rockets. Anything with this group specifically is only going to be kind of a sliding scale.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly a very legitimate and fair concern. I think the Rockets are in a situation where they're, you know, seeing that they need to be more retooled than overhauled. You know, I think any idea of a James Harden trade is more fantasy than reality at this point. You know, with Russell Westbrook, you know, theoretically there could be a suitor, but even then, I don't think that there's enough value to recoup where you think you'd be able to compete with Harden and whatever assets you get back. So, you know, they're going to need to make some moves along the margins, you know, probably add a legitimate big, no matter how tough PJ Tucker is. But that's the kind of thing. And that's why losing Morey here stings so much because, you know, as we saw with Covington or Jeff Green, you know, he was able to make these moves along the margins, even dating back to say Shane Battier, right? Or Luis Scola a decade ago, right? Daryl was able to make the moves on the margins to keep the Rockets afloat. If the next GM can't quite do that, I think the end of the Harden tenure might get a little ugly here. So I think they're definitely going to ride the two MVPs going into next year, try to make some adjustments. But you make a fair point. You know, is this a top three team in the West? You know, probably no way. I don't think, you know, top five is even questionable. So this could unfortunately be a year where Houston is kind of stuck in the mud, and then it's going to make it even harder to make those evaluations on the two MVPs moving forward.
What do we know, or what do you know about Raphael Stone, his replacement? I mean, I've known him in league circles, but he's certainly not someone that most of the average NBA fans are familiar with. He hasn't been in the mix for some of those, you know, top executive jobs, at least not in recent years. I know he was down in the bubble with the team, but what can you say about who he is and kind of what his role has been with the team in recent years?
You know, he's been kind of an integral figure in kind of building this version of the Rockets. You know, he's taken an interim role, but perhaps just the way that the roster is kind of constructed, maybe there's a chance that Tillman Fertitta keeps someone in-house as the general manager just because they can continue to execute Morey's vision. You know, I don't necessarily think that his departure marks a necessary change of course for the Rockets, right? I don't know if all of a sudden someone's going to come in here and totally change things. I think Stone is viewed as a very smart guy. You know, I think the Rockets' brain trust, there's been kind of a brain drain with guys getting hired from all around. They seem to kind of churn out more and more smart executives, and I think Stone is one of them. And if he gets a shot at the big chair, he'll definitely continue Morey's vision. And as I said, look to tweak things more than overhaul them completely, in my opinion.
Yeah, see, I and this is, again, more putting your speculation hat on sure. At this point and looking at it from a broader perspective. I'm not so sure that I mean, look, as I sit here now and we're not even into free agency, whenever the hell that's going to start and, you know, the draft hasn't happened yet, I don't know that they're a contender. And if they're not a contender, I've always found that being proactive is better than being reactive. There's just far more evidence that being proactive works. And I vividly remember, as someone that lives in the Northeast, you know, what happened with Boston, you know, when they had their aging core. You know, Danny Ainge made the deals he made early, you know, got real stuff for Paul Pierce and for Kevin Garnett in that deal with Brooklyn. You know, Harden remains, despite his exorbitant salary, an incredibly marketable player. Like, there will be teams that will, maybe not trip over themselves, but go after James Harden pretty hard if he was available. Russell Westbrook is a different conversation. I'm not exactly sure what the market would bear out for him. I don't think he can just dump him on the Knicks like he used to be able to. But the Harden situation is interesting. I mean, again, we're just sort of, you know, it's sort of guesswork here to try to figure out where this team is going to go. But what do you think the market would be for a James Harden? And how difficult do you think it would be for ownership to trade him?
I think for James Harden specifically, it would be a pretty robust market, right? I think whether it's joining another superstar or a team that's really looking for a face of the franchise, I mean, you know, you can kind of harp on his shortcomings all you want. I still think he is one of, if not the best scorer of his generation. I think if there's a supporting cast that's more perfectly engineered, you know, a co-star that's, you know, better fitting than Russell Westbrook specifically, I think he can continue to have, you know, career years and maybe ultimately get over the hump in the right situation. In terms of ownership dealing him, I still think that the fan base isn't tired of him as the face of the franchise. You know, I still think they'd really adore James Harden, rightfully so. I think it's really hard to trade him this year. You know, as I kind of noted, I think they're going to run back the MVPs. They'll definitely run back Harden specifically. I understand it would be smart to get proactive. I just don't really see that much of a blockbuster happening. And as you said with the Russell Westbrook conversation, it's interesting, right? Because I think in an ideal world for the Rockets, perhaps they would hit the reset button. But is there really a deal where they're going to do anything but really dump his contract? You know, I don't know if the returning pieces they get back would really put them in a better place. So I think that as you said, they're not the top of the West, but they feel kind of stalled out right now with how they're constructed.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that, you know, what they gave, like, I can understand any reluctance by Daryl to do the Westbrook deal with Oklahoma City, because that was like Paul George 2.0, where you had, like, you know, the Clippers badly wanted Paul George because they needed him. The Rockets needed to do something because of the Chris Paul Harden situation in Houston, and you know, Oklahoma City was able to kind of hold him over the barrel a little bit. I just, to your point, I don't think if you just say Russell Westbrook's on the market, I don't know that you're going to get flooded with offers. He's just, I'm one of the charter members of the Russell Westbrook bandwagon. I think he has been criminally, and not to make this all about Westbrook, but I think his triple-double record of three consecutive years is never, ever going to be repeated. Ever, 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 ever. That is the Joe DiMaggio hitting streak of basketball records. But, you know, like he's a depreciating asset. He's never been a perimeter shooter. And eventually, that athleticism is going to wane. I mean, I can't, as I sit here talking to you, I can't think of a team out there that would jump at a Russell Westbrook, especially when you consider the years left in his contract when, you know, a premium for teams that are in the hunt, like Miami or Toronto or teams like that, they're looking at free agency in 2021. They're not looking to take on salaries like that. I don't want to call them untradeable, but I don't know what the market would be for Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, two quick points on that. I think in terms of his market, the thing that makes more sense is probably more of a downtrodden team. You know, maybe it's the Kings, maybe it's the Knicks. You know,
you can't send Russell Westbrook to the Kings. Russell Westbrook, I don't think he's reporting to the Kings. I don't think he's showing up for the Kings.
I hope not personally. And you know, I enjoy, you know, interacting with Russell on a day-to-day basis. So I don't want to send him out there to Sacramento like that. I don't think a contender will pull the trigger on him. I agree. I think that ultimately with the Rockets, I think there is a world where they're going to convince themselves that, you know, Russell Westbrook in the second half of the year really played terrific basketball. His knee was hurt, you know, in the bubble, and maybe with a full health year for Westbrook and Harden, year two with this core, maybe they can go out and win 50 plus games. I don't think that's totally crazy of a proposition. I just think ultimately when push comes to shove in the playoffs, their shortcomings are going to hurt them again. So they could very well run this back, have a very successful regular season. But I think when we wind up here at the end of 2020, 2021, they're going to be in a, you know, more frustrating place if they don't go ahead and be proactive, as you said.
Yeah. And I mean, look, they all credit for winning that first round series, but you know, they're maybe one bad inbounds pass from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from, you know, losing that series. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they get that one win against the Lakers. Maybe you can speak to the Houston fan base, the Houston market. Like, you know, and you know this, Les Alexander wanted that team to stay relevant. Like, he did not want that team to bottom out. Maybe Fertitta has the same philosophy on it, but this might be one of those situations where bottoming out or at least, you know, getting off some of these contracts and maximizing your talent is the best thing to do. I mean, Harden, the guy plays a lot of minutes and has a lot of miles on his tires. Like he's been a virtuoso since he's been there, but he's shouldered the burden of that team for many years now. He's still at peak value, but you know, he's one injury away one season of a bunch of nagging injuries away from potentially, you know, being far less desirable from some of these teams, especially as he ages. One last thing on the coaching search right now. I think these names that are out there are interesting. Like I think Steven Silas is an excellent coach. I have been almost stunned that he hasn't had a head coaching job up until this point, given his history first with Golden State, then with Charlotte, now with Dallas. He's got the lineage, his father, of course, Paul Silas, former NBA coach, widely respected across the league. I just can't see, like I can see Jeff Van Gundy coaching this team. I'm not sure I can see a rookie coach in Steven Silas coaching James Harden and Russell Westbrook. That's just sort of my 10,000-foot view of it. Like if a Steve Silas hire might represent to me that they might, you know, eventually look to tear that thing down. What have you made of the names that have been out there for the Rockets head coaching search?
Yeah, you make a pretty interesting point on Silas and the other two candidates that they've kind of seems to have whittled down are Van Gundy, as we mentioned, and current assistant John Lucas. You know, I think John Lucas is a terrific man. You know, he's an NBA lifer and he does have a very good relationship with James Harden and Russell Westbrook and really the whole team. But again, it seems like both he and Silas, it's not the kind of name perhaps, you know, you think you need to lead a team that has finals aspirations. You know, Van Gundy, I think, is obviously a very sharp basketball mind. You know, he stayed involved as a coach with USA Basketball. I consider him probably the quote unquote leader in the clubhouse after Ty Lue decided to stay with the Clippers. He's probably the most sensible candidate. You know, I've heard very glowing reviews about Silas, as you said, so perhaps they go with kind of a new age hire. But ultimately, I think on opening night, we'll have Jeff Van Gundy there, which I think is going to be pretty fascinating to see him and James Harden where the Rockets go from here.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, Daryl, I guess at least by according to the ESPN report, is going to be part of kind of an advisor during this coaching search as well. Daryl really liked Stephen Silas back a few years back before they hired Mike D'Antoni. There was that mix of Stephen Silas and Lionel Hollins. Like, they were going to be like a coaching combination. Silas, the young head coach, Hollins, the veteran lead assistant. Like, Daryl, I'm not sure what happened with the Mike D'Antoni hire and how it all shook out, but Daryl was always very high on Stephen Silas and his coach. So I wonder if that still, if he has that kind of influence still with that team as they make a coaching hire. Some of the quotes that Fertitta's given says he's still going to tap Daryl's brain. So I wonder what the dynamic looks like, you know, moving forward, at least for the short term.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Morey will still be at least, you know, pretty heavily involved with the coaching search. I mean, Fertitta said a few weeks ago that he's going to leave the entire coaching search up to Morey. So it's kind of hard to see him totally abandoning that now. Now, the degree of influence that he'll have, you're right, that's in question. But that's some pretty good insight there. I think that perhaps Scott Silas can control the room. You know, he is a very smart guy. So we're in an interesting situation here with the Rockets. It's a very tenuous situation entering next year, and I think nerves are going to be kind of high all next season.
Yeah, very smart guy. Got glowing reviews from his early work with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson in Golden State. So he's got the chops. Just sometimes teams are a little gun shy about taking a chance on a young assistant. Oftentimes it works out. I mean, they just but teams are always, you know, almost reflexively go to the veteran coach like a Jeff Van Gundy, who could do a good job as well. It's just it'll be an interesting year for sure. That you, whenever this next season starts, Mike Shapiro, appreciate your time, man. Keep up the great work, and I'm sure you'll be busy over at SI.com for the next couple of weeks at least with this Houston team.
I certainly will. Thank you so much.